Good evening, everybody, and welcome to this meeting of the City of Sydney Local Planning Panel. Before we start, I would like to acknowledge that we are meeting on the land of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation and pay my respects to Aboriginal Elders past and present. And the panel also acknowledges present Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander people who reside in this area. Meeting today is to consider the two development applications listed on the agenda, and the panel tonight is myself, Richard Pearson, as the independent chair, Helen Lockhead and Sean Carter as independent expert members, and community representative Amelia Thorpe. Welcome everyone tonight. Please be ensured we will be making decisions tonight on the merits, the planning merits of each application, and following consideration of any views expressed in submissions and by people addressing the panel tonight. Determinations and any relevant decision of the panel will be by a majority of votes of members present and entitled to vote. If votes are tied, the chair will have the casting vote. As an important transparency measure, the reasons for our decisions will be recorded in the minutes as part of the decision. If the panel goes against or amends officers' recommendations, the panel will state the reasons for that. The format for tonight is the Manager of Planning Assessments will provide an overview of each application under consideration, key issues raised and the recommendations of Council staff. We'll then hear from any members of the public registered to speak. At this point I don't think we have any, and the applicant and or his or her representative. Please note there is a 3-minute limit for each speaker with a warning bell at 2 minutes. Each speaker should be heard in silence while they're addressing the panel, courtesy and respect observed throughout the meeting. Please ensure no personal criticism directed at any speaker or council staff. Any criticism would be contrary to our panel code of conduct and would not be accepted. The panel may ask questions of speakers and or applicants to clarify our understanding of what is being said. If you are registered to speak, your address to the panel will be recorded. All the public meetings of the panel are recorded and the recordings are available on the City's website. Please note there is no recording or filming of this meeting other than the formal record. After hearing from speakers, the panel will consider and make its decision on each application, which may involve adjourning the meeting to confer among ourselves before reconvening to make the decision, or we might make the decision without the need to adjourn. If the panel considers more information is required, we have the option to defer making a decision for consideration at a later date. So thank you with that preamble. I'll move on to item one, which is disclosures of interest. And tonight I have pecuniary interest returns, the return date of 30 June 2018 to table for most of the panel members, so I'm tabling those. And then in relation to the specific applications on the agenda tonight, we have Mr. Carter has disclosed a less than significant non-pecuniary interest in item 4 on the agenda, which is the development application for 34 Charles Street, Forest Lodge, as his wife went to school with the applicant, Mr. Adrian McCown. He has socialised in a large group when he first met his wife, which is interesting to note, over 24 years ago. He cannot remember being in a social situation with Adrian for 15 to 20 years and has never personally had a social get-together with Adrian without the company of many others. That disclosure is made as a less than significant non-pecuniary interest declaration. No other members have declared any pecuniary or non-pecuniary interest in any other matter on the agenda for tonight's meeting. In accordance with Clause 4.10 of the Code of Conduct for Local Planning Panels, all members have signed a declaration of interest form in relation to each matter on the agenda and they become part of the public record of this meeting. So, item 2, confirmation of minutes. The panel notes the minutes of the last Local Planning Panel meeting of the 29th of August 2018, which have been endorsed by the chair of that meeting. Which now brings us to the suspended business of the Local Planning Panel. We have item 3, development application 344 Crown Street, Surry Hills. So the format is that Bill will provide a brief overview of the application and then we'll invite any speakers to speak. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair. I'd like to disclose that the staff would like to amend their recommendation in the deferred commencement condition section. That is in part A of the conditions of consent. And the recommendation of the amendment is to change the 24-month period for the satisfaction of those four conditions to a 6-month period. And the reason for that is particular circumstances of this DA. We certainly appreciate the applicant has made the DA, but under the circumstances, I think these four conditions can be met and within an appropriate time period given the potential risks. I have socialised that potential change with the applicant, and he's indicated that he is willing to accept it. So with that in mind, I'd like to...
Ms. Young, and I'll hand over now for Bill to do a presentation.
Thank you, Chair. So this is an application for a development at 344 Crown Street. It's for the use of an existing building as a boarding house with 6 rooms. The premises are currently being used as a boarding house but without consent, so the application is to regularise that situation. The proposed occupancy is 10 persons. The site is in a B4 mixed-use zone as permissible with consent, and the application is recommended for a deferred commencement approval. The application was notified in April and May of this year. 57 owners and occupiers of adjoining and surrounding properties were notified. No submissions were received. So this is the site on the east side of Crown Street. It's a three-level building. The floor plans are shown in this slide. There's one bedroom at the ground floor level. Then two rooms at the bedrooms at the first floor level with the communal rooms and kitchen facilities, and then three rooms above to section through the existing building. So this building is viewed from Crown Street. There's no works proposed, so the building will remain the same when viewed from Crown Street. The next set of photos are some photographs of the inside of the building. On the left you have the indoor communal area, and then above that you have the upper level courtyard, which is partly open. It has a polycarbonate type roof over it, and then the side boundaries are sort of partly enclosed by open lattice. In terms of compliance with the affordable housing set, it complies with the requirements for communal living areas. The minimum room size, there's some non-compliance with the minimum room size. Bedroom 6 has an area of approximately 7.8 square metres, just under 8 square metres. Bedroom 3 has an area of 9.5 square metres. The minimum room size is 12 square metres for a room to be occupied by one person, 16 square metres to be occupied by two. In terms of bicycle spaces, the affordable housing set requires a minimum of one bicycle space on the site and one motorcycle space on the site, and there's no provision for bicycle or motorcycle parking. In terms of the number of people per room, as I mentioned, the minimum size of a room for one person is 12 square metres, 16 square metres or more than one. There's a total of 10 people proposed within the 6 rooms within the building. The recommendation is that the maximum occupancy should be 4-8. In terms of open space, there's no requirement in the affordable housing set, but it can't be refused if there is 20 square metres provided. That sort of partly open and partly enclosed space at the upper level is approximately 10 square metres. In terms of bicycle, motorcycle parking spaces, as I said, it's non-compliant. In terms of the LEP, the height and floor space of the building is not changing. and the existing building compliance with both height and floor space. Up to one car parking space could be provided. Obviously, no car parking is proposed. In terms of the DCP, the three-storey height control, the built form is not changing. It complies with that. There are provisions in the DCP about boarding houses. There's a non-compliance with that minimum 12 square metre room size, which reflects the same control in the set. The indoor communal space complies with the DCP and an open space requirement. There is an open space requirement in the DCP and there's a non-compliance for that. So the issues are essentially the clause 4.6 of variations to the development standard for motorcycle and the bicycle parking. Clearly, to physically provide motorcycle parking on the site would require physical alterations to the building, which would be cost prohibitive and would have an adverse impact on the building. And the internal amenity issues in terms of room sizes and occupancy. So one motorcycle space is required, enough space to propose. The clause 4.6 is supported, and the site's located within an accessible location. In terms of the internal amenity, bedrooms 1, 2 and 4 are bedrooms that can accommodate two lodgers. Bedrooms 3 and 5 should be restricted to one lodger. They're the bedrooms that are below that minimum 16 square metres for two lodgers. And in terms of bedroom 6, that's just under 8 square metres, the recommendation is that that should not be used as a living space, and is to be used as an office or storage type facilities associated with the use. The communal space facilities don't fully comply, but they're considered adequate given the site constraints. So the application is recommended for a deferred commencement consent. That requires a plan of management and the plans to be amended to reflect the changes in terms of occupancy. And there are also other controls in terms of the deferred commencement payment of the relevant contribution, works done in terms of upgrading the building if necessary to comply with relevant provisions for the BCA. Thank you.
Thank you for that. So I have one registered speaker, which is the applicant, Mr. Mark Tedeschi, if you would like to. Mark, just come forward, press the button, and address the panel, please.
Thank you very much. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak. There are two issues that I wanted to address you about. The first issue is the recommendation that room 6 not be permitted as a bedroom for a lodger. It is a small room. The actual size, I measured it this morning physically myself, it's 8.1 square metres, which is below the requirement. But I have to tell you, it is a very popular room. I get numerous applicants for the room because it's cheap. They get a lot of early 20s people, visitors and Australians. Yes. And I've taken a photo of that room, which I'd like to give to you. Although it's a small room, there is a shower and a toilet immediately outside that room, which is shared with only one other room, room 5. So there's only two people that share the one separate bath, separate shower and toilet. And there's also a large common area immediately outside that room, room 6. So there's a lot of space available for the occupant, even though the room itself. That's room 6, yes. So my application is for you to allow a single resident in room 6. Now, the second thing I wanted to talk to you about is I don't know if you have the power to do this, but I'd like to apply to have the contribution waived. The number of people who have been living in the house has been constant, as I understand it, for some considerable time, about 10 people. And so the number of people is not going to increase. So the requirement for council's amenities won't increase because of this change of use. It's really just a regularisation of what has been there for some time previously. With affordable housing, it's only just financially viable, and a $28,000 contribution just makes the whole thing completely unviable financially. So I wanted to apply to have the contribution waived. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do panel members have any questions of Mr. Tedeschi?
Did you discuss the period of deferred commencement? The time? 6 months. Okay. So that was, and you were okay with that?
I'm content for a 6 month period. I was going to do it immediately anyway, so a 6 month period is fine.
Thank you for that. I will, if you want to resume your seat in the gallery, thank you very much. And I'll ask Mr. Yarn to respond to the two issues you've raised.
So, my understanding is that the panel is probably out of jurisdiction to change the contribution. What is available, I suppose, to the our proponent is to seek modification to that part of the condition, and for council to staff to consider whether or not any exemptions about taking into consideration pre-existing conditions, even though they're not approved, can be taken into account. So the exemption provisions are very tight and we have to follow them strictly. And so you've circulated the photograph of speaking to Mr. Tedeschi just briefly prior to this, and he said this was actually one of the more popular rooms. The only thing is, I would just say that the implication is that if the occupancy were to increase, it potentially has an impact on condition three, which is the contribution.
Clarify. So the condition that's been drafted is taking into account the reduced occupancy. So if you increased it by one person, the contribution rate's going to go up as well, proportionately. And that can't be waived. Yeah.
And if we approve an extra person for bedroom six, do we need a provision for a manager's office?
Such a small boarding house. They were just suggestions. If you're of a mind, considering it was falling way below the minimum, for how you might use that room. But if the panel is of a mind to support its retention, there's no other requirement for a manager's office.
So, I'm just raising this as I think about it in terms of the contributions, so we're bringing forward the deferred commencement conditions to 6 months, whether there's any scope to, because there's some quite urgent fire upgrade work required, which is an expense to the applicant and is very important, obviously, in a boarding house situation, whether it's possible to maintain the 24-month deferral in relation to the contributions so that there's separate, so there's some further time for that to be accommodated while you're doing the fire upgrade, which to my way of thinking is obviously the most important thing that should be done, whether we could split out that into a separate deferred regime of 24 months for the contributions. Everything else gets done within 6 months. I'd appreciate a response.
My technical problem with that would be that potentially the work could be commenced and completed before the deferred contribution, and there's actually no mechanism for recovery of that because it's already past the CC.
Is it not possible to effectively have, you know, two schedules of deferred, deferred commencement condition A and B, and that the B, which would be in relation to section 94, has a 24-month activation period rather than a 6-month activation period? I'm just trying to look at whether there is some scope to ease the financial burden so that the most pressing work is done urgently and get done within 6 months. It's a question about structuring the consent, so I'm just appreciate why that's, you know, if there's any legal view perhaps on whether that could be done.
It's only possible to have one deferred commencement period. There is other things we could do in relation to the contribution conditions, in terms of moving it into the operational conditions of the consent rather than being part of the deferred commencement consent if we had an appropriate timing mechanism to set that up.
Example, I guess, if it's not prior to CC, could be pushed prior to interim OC or That's potentially the first OC. But that would be the last mechanism that you could use in a standard fashion to...
Yeah. Okay, so condition, the first commencement condition three would move from part A into part... Not sure. Start part B. That's something for us to think about, and look, I'd be interested in the view of other panel members in relation to bedroom six.
Bedroom six does appear to have good amenity, just have a window to the outside, and if this image here is bedroom six, which I have no reason to believe it's not, it does look like a suitable bedroom.
Agree. That looks to have satisfactory amenity for one person, so I can't see why it wouldn't be suitable.
Yeah, I would also agree it's helpful to have the photos that change of it.
So with the conditions as recommended by council staff, and with the amendment to the first commencement period from 24 months to 6 months, are people comfortable with moving? Look, would that make any material difference to you in terms of the Section 94 contribution if you had a longer period of time, or you, it doesn't matter? Can you press, if you come back, Mark, and just...
It would make a difference if it could be delayed 24 months, because it means that the payments are then spread out over a longer period. And as you say, the main expense building-wise is going to be during that first 6 months. So, yes, that would help, if it's possible.
Did you want to say what?
My recommendation is that if we move the condition from part A to part B, that it be couched, that it be paid prior to any OC, interim or final, or in the absence of an OC being required for the works, prior to a date. Because there is some uncertainty about what this amounts to in terms of scope of work and whether or not it can be done through private certification or whether it's exempt. Yeah, in which case we wouldn't have actually any requirement then for the payment to be made.
It is important, obviously, to have a mechanism that will... starting back from the request from the applicant, there's nothing for us that would permit us to, on merit, vary the contribution that's proposed. And as mentioned, if we add back in bedroom six, it will actually go up somewhat, probably not massively, but it will increase. So we would need, but we do need a mechanism to ensure that it doesn't slip through the net, if you like. So if we do put it into Part B and your words about occupation study or a date, what would that date be? What would be a reasonable date to insert?
I think that we could work with 2 years. So you'd have a recommendation with a Part C, which says that an amended contribution condition be included in Part B, and that be subject to timing mechanisms. Such as an interim OC or any OC, and in the absence of an OC being required within 2 years of the date of determination.
So I guess I'll just put it to panel members, but are you comfortable, we're comfortable with adding back in bedroom six? Okay, that's good. Panel members, comfortable with allowing effectively a longer period of time to satisfy the Section 94 contribution in order that some of the quality of priority fire safety upgrades occur. Okay, so we're comfortable with that. The thing we've got to do is actually have a form of words. So the amendment in relation to Bedroom 6 is pretty straightforward. What I'm going to suggest is we maybe just briefly adjourn in order that we get the words right on these changes, unless people have... Okay, we just briefly adjourn and we'll come back and make a determination on this application. So if the public gallery can hold file, that's what we'll do. We'll adjourn now at 5:35 and we'll reconvene as soon as possible. Thank you. At 5:45. So, for the panel discussed the issue of the request for bedroom 6 to be reinstated as a bedroom for a single occupant and the due date for payment of Section 7.11 contributions. And what I'll propose is an amendment to the consent as follows. It adds a new Part C to the consent, which states that the panel is of the view that Bedroom 6 can be used as a single room, as a room for a single occupant, and that all references to deletion of Bedroom 6 from the consent be removed. That's the first change proposed. And then the second one is to add a new Part B, which says as follows. The section, so Part 1 of Part B, the Section 7.11 contributions be relocated into Schedule 1 of the consent and edited to be payable prior to issue of any occupation certificate or within 24 months of the date of the consent, whichever is the earlier. And a new part 2 which says the section 7.11 contributions be revised to now include the occupancy of room 6 for a single occupant. So there, and the earlier change that Mr. Yarn proposed about the deferred commencement activating after 6 months, not 24 months, in part A of the consent. So they're the changes to what was proposed in the original instrument. But I'm proposing those changes, and I'll put it to vote. All in favour, say aye. Aye. Against, declare that carried unanimously. And thank you to staff, and thank you to the applicant for his contribution tonight. Thank you very much. So, thank you. I now move to item 4. And this is for 34 Charles Street, Forest Lodge, and I'll hand over to Mr. Mackay for a presentation on that item.
Thank you.
You will just note as well that this concerning an applicant, an employee of council is the reason it's referred to the panel, and an independent report was prepared by Helena Miller for council, who is also present tonight. If any panel members have any questions they want to ask of Helena Miller, thank you.
Yes. So this is an application for alterations to an existing two-storey terrace dwelling, including a two-storey addition to the rear. The site is in a residential zone. The development is permissible with consent. The application is recommended for approval, subject to conditions. So the application was notified in July of this year. 69 owners and occupiers of adjoining the surrounding properties were notified. No submissions were received. This is the site. It's located on the south side of Charles Street. And this is the site from the street. All the proposed works after this application are to the rear, so the presentation of the building to the street will remain unchanged. So just some context photographs. This is a view of the rear of the site from the car park to the east. You can see at the rear of some of the terraces within the row there are already two-storey additions. So these photographs show a view of the rear yard of the premises. So on the left-hand side, you have a view looking from the rear yard to the back of the existing building. And on the right-hand side, you have a view from the first floor of the existing dwelling looking towards the rear yard. The building on the left-hand side of that photograph is the adjoining building. This is a view of the from the rear of the premises to the rear yard and the buildings opposite. As this is ground floor plans. The existing lean-to additions are to be demolished and replaced by an extension to the dwelling, which is both from side boundary to side boundary to provide additional kitchen and family living facilities. And then at first floor level, there is an additional bedroom proposed, which aligns roughly with the two-storey element of the adjoining building. This is the south elevation of proposed development, and the east elevation, and the west elevation. So the second storey level on the west side is built to the boundary, and on the east side it's set off the boundary. This is a section through the proposed addition. And this is a view of the addition that is proposed and details of the materials. So in terms of the LEP controls, the development comfortably complies with the 9-metre height limit for the site and the maximum 1.25 to 1 FSR for the site, and no car parking is proposed. In terms of the DCP controls, so there's a two-storey control on the site which it complies with. It complies with the setback requirements. One of the DCP requirements for the second storey addition is that it aligns with other additions within the terrace row, which it does. It complies with the minimum requirement for private open space and also the overshadowing of adjoining surrounding properties. So I suppose the primary issue is the rear building alignment. This plan, the red dotted line shows the existing rear alignment and where that dotted line jumps out from the alignment is where you currently have two-storey additions in the rear of the terrace. So the application is recommended for approval subject to conditions. Thank you.
Thank you. I don't actually have anyone registered to speak on this item. I'll just check there's nobody in the gallery that wants to speak to this item. Okay, so I'll pass it over to the panel.
Just I'll make a few references to the conditions. Everywhere we have the word architect, I wonder if we should just modify that to say architect /designer. It appears a building designer or a designer has drawn the plans, and it's not clear if that person's an architect, because you could take that technical thing out, so we'll add that in. Under design mods, I wonder if we can insert item D, that all walls on boundaries should be masonry and not timber. And the third part, maybe in addition to condition 16, which is a stormwater condition, part B, that the applicant submit a stormwater concept plan prior to the issuing of a CC. Just to do some thinking about what it's like to work with buildings boundary to boundary in these type conditions. And that's a concept plan, not a hydraulic plan.
Okay. Dion, did you have any comment on the proposal, or is it other panel members have any comment?
I think from the staff's perspective, the first point is just to regularise the terminology used in the report to reflect the designer who prepared the plans. And the second part is, I think, reasonable proposal, as suggested.
Any other comments from panel members? Okay. So, with those three proposed changes to the draft conditions of consent, happy to move that. All in favour, say aye. Aye. Okay, carried unanimously. So that completes tonight's meeting. Thank you all for your attendance, and we'll see you next time. Thank you very much.